We are just four Saturdays away from Division I college football being back as games will be played on August 25th. Welcome in to episode two of the Four Verticals podcast. I am your host, Harrison Graham. And yeah, 28 days from now, Division I college football, it's back. Granted, the big games of week one will not be until the next Saturday, September 1st. But we're closing in. Even then, just 5 weeks away as we get closer to college football, the greatest sport on earth, being back to our graces. On episode two of the Four Verticals podcast, I'm going to get into a couple of different things. My Big 12 Power 5 quarterbacks. I've decided I'm going to start this Power 5 series where the last segment of the next several episodes, I will do a Power 5 something. Quarterbacks, running backs, teams in the conference. Probably right before the season starts, I'll probably do my Power 5 teams in all of college football. But this week, I'm going to do my Power 5 Big 12 quarterbacks. Lots of turnover this year. Will Greer, really the one veteran coming back. Lots of new faces. So we'll see how I rank my Big 12 quarterbacks heading into 2018. I want to fix the college football playoff, and I really don't think it's that hard to do. The system's better than it used to be, but it's far from perfect, and I don't know that there is a perfect system, but there are a couple of ways and a couple different ways that the system can improve, and I will go through some of those scenarios. It's not hard. It's really not that hard, and I'm going to tell you why it's not hard and how to fix the college football playoff. I'm going to talk all things CFP next as we get underway here on the Four Verticals podcast. Football media days are all but wrapped up, as over the last couple of weeks, all the major and group of five conferences have been doing their media days, kind of ramping up the excitement for the college football season. This is episode two of the Four Verticals podcast. I'm your host, Harrison Graham. Coming up in 15 minutes or so, I'm going to give you my Power 5 Big 12 conference quarterbacks heading into the 2018 season. Who cracks my list except for Will Greer? Lots of new names in the Big 12. I'll get into some of that coming up in about 15 minutes. But right now, I want to get into the college football playoff. And I mentioned media days because that's been a large discussion point at all of these media days. You've heard a lot of conference commissioners and head coaches be asked the question, you know, does the playoff need fixing? Is it time to expand? Do we need a new format, new criteria? And I think a lot of those answers are simply yes. I mean, the system's better than it used to be. But it's time for change, and it's time to evolve. We evolved 5 years ago. It's time to evolve again. I don't want to wait seven more years, as currently the college football playoff is on a 12-year contract for the current stipulations. I don't want to wait seven more years in the current system. It's time to change. I've got ways to fix it, and I'll go through some of those right now. And here's the problem, and here's why I want to fix it, and I want to go through some of the reasonings why. And the first reasoning is very simple. On September 1st, when the majority of college football teams open up their 2018 season, only about, I'll say, between 50 and 60 teams out of 130 Division I college football teams have a prayer of making the college football playoff and ultimately playing for a national championship. Now, realistically, obviously, that number is way less than that. It's probably more like 10 to 15 teams based on talent and teams that have a legitimate chance of having an excellent season. But the point remains that college football is the only sport that teams heading into a season know they have no chance for playing for a national championship. Right now, in the current system, if you're a group of five team, you've got no chance. Just look at last year. Central Florida goes 14-0. And they don't even sniff the top four. I think the highest the committee had them was somewhere between 8 and 10. They were no higher than 8 heading into bowl season. They weren't even close. The committee did not even consider Central Florida. And not only that, it was in a year in which no Power 5 team went undefeated. Think about that. I know Central Florida plays in the American, but the American is clearly the next best conference outside of the Power 5. And I think if you look closely last year, it really wasn't that much worse than the Pac-12. I'm not saying it was better than the Pac-12. In fact, it wasn't as good, but it was fairly close. Central Florida was good. Memphis was a good team. There were some other – South Florida's a damn good team. There was four or five, you know, fringe top 25 teams in that conference, and the College Football Playoff Committee just refused to think that was the case. Just didn't even acknowledge Central Florida and the rest of that conference. So that's number one. Teams on September 1st, at least half of Division I knows they don't have a chance because they're not in a Power 5 conference. Number two, let's look at some quick history. Let's go all the way back to 2014. First year of the playoff. We're all excited, right? We're going to have this four-team playoff, two semifinal games, and the winner plays the national championship in Jerry World. It's perfect. Well, it didn't play out that way because heading into the last week, the TCU Horned Frogs, who were number three in the country, dismantled Iowa State 55-3 and dropped from 3-6 in the College Football Playoff Committee's final rankings. And I get it. Ohio State drilled Wisconsin the Big Ten title game, and they talk about the complete body of work. It clinched the Big Ten for them. They had another top 15 win or whatever Wisconsin was at the time. Ohio State was peaking at the right time. I get it. And I'm not even saying that was an awful decision by the committee. I don't know. They did go on to win the national championship. I'm saying the system was flawed because that year specifically, there were six teams that had legitimate arguments of being in those four spots, and TCU and Baylor both got left out. TCU specifically is who I'm focusing on because from game one to game 13, they were probably the most consistent team in college football that year. They led the nation in turnover differential. They led the nation in point differential in terms of outscoring their opponents. I think it was something like 27 points a game. They outscored their opponents. Just a really terrific year. They ended up drilling Ole Miss 42-3 in the Peach Bowl. Didn't have a chance to play for a national championship. So that's one scenario. We go back to 2016. Penn State starts 1-2, but then wins out and wins the Big Ten, which to me was the strongest conference in college football that season. Doesn't get in the playoff. Ohio State does get in. Yes, they had one less loss. You know, that was really controversial. I could see it both ways. I thought Penn State earned it. They won the Big Ten. They won 10 games in a row to end the year. The committee goes with Ohio State. What happens? The Buckeyes get drilled by Clemson, and I think the other semifinal game was a blowout too. I'm not saying the committee got that one wrong either. I'm saying the system's bad. We need an expanded playoff. What do we all want? Don't we want it settled on the field? If we have to play a few extra playoff games, so be it. Cut off a regular season game. So everybody talks about player safety. Well, let's not play FCS schools anymore. I know that you want a tune-up game, and I know it benefits those schools, but you know what? The FCS has their own schedule. They can figure it out. Or cut off conference championship games. I think either way works. And then you look at 2017, a couple of things. Alabama-Ohio State discussion. It was a tough argument. I mean, Ohio State had two losses, including a 30-point loss to a bad Iowa team. And Alabama, here's the thing. I know Alabama won the national championship last year. Go look at their schedule before the playoff. They lost to Auburn by double digits, and their best win was against Mississippi State, who lost four games last year. Alabama did not have a good resume. I know they only lost one game last year, but the SEC was down. It was very top-heavy with Alabama, Georgia, and Auburn. They did not have to play Georgia until the national championship game. Really caught a break there by a pretty beneficial schedule. And Ohio State gets left out after winning the Big Ten and beating Wisconsin. I didn't think that was a playoff team based on this system. However, in a better system, they probably earned the right to play for the national championship. And the biggest snub of all, and the biggest just reason, and I mentioned it earlier, is UCF not even getting a chance last year. I know they had defensive issues, and I know that, you know, they play in the American. I get it. And everybody says they wouldn't have had a chance. Well, how do you know? And that's the problem. We can't know in this current system. I would have much rather there be an 18 playoff last year and UCF got drilled by 40 in the first round than us having to wonder at home whether or not Central Florida was the best team or one of the best teams in college football last year. They beat Auburn in the Peach Bowl, And of course, everybody says, oh, Auburn, you know, they wanted to be in the playoff and they lost their last game. They weren't interested. That's bogus. That is crap. That's somehow UCF's fault. That diminishes their win over a very good Auburn team in the Peach Bowl. A win that really ended up not being that close, by the way. UCF controlled that game from start to finish. That Auburn team beat both teams playing for the national championship in Alabama and Georgia. I'm going to propose a couple of different playoff scenarios and how to fix this thing. The first way is simple, an 8-team playoff format. And I think the easiest way to do it is you have your five Power 5 conference champions, Big 12, Pac-12, SEC, ACC, and Big 10. You've got three wild cards. One of those wild cards, if an unbeaten group of five team, if a group of five team goes undefeated, they're automatic. They are in. That takes one of the wild cards. If there's not an unbeaten group of five team, then they can still earn one of the wild cards, but it's not automatic admission. And the other two are wild cards. So last year, this is what it would have been. And tell me if this just would have been some awful playoff. You've got Georgia out of the SEC. You've got Oklahoma out of the Big 12. You've got Ohio State out of the Big 10. You've got USC out of the Pac-12. And you've got Clemson out of the ACC. All those teams made the playoff except for Ohio State, who was barely left out in favor of Alabama. And USC didn't make the playoff either. So there's your five automatics. UCF gets the automatic wild card by going undefeated as a group of five team. Last two spots, Alabama gets one. And, you know, it would have been something between Penn State or Wisconsin. It would have been one of those two, likely, is the last two spots. Either way, you're living with that. In that scenario, if you're Wisconsin or Penn State and you get left out because you're the ninth team, are you really arguing? And I guess people will always argue and there will always be this whole snub thing on who gets left out. You're not looking at the ninth team in the country, typically, as a legitimate team that can play for the national championship. If you're number nine in the country when the final rankings come out, all you can do is blame yourself, because that means you've lost at least two games, if not three, or you lost games down the stretch. But if you're the fifth team right now, or if you're a group of five team that goes undefeated, you've got legitimate argument. You're like, what else do we have to do? What was UCF supposed to do last year? They won all their games. All of them. Most of them not even close. And guess what? The College Football Playoff Committee points to their schedule. Teams won't schedule UCF. They won't schedule top group of five teams because it doesn't really benefit them. That's why we have to change this format. You've got to equal the playing field a little bit. Right now, this system is benefiting brand names and group of five teams, or brand names and Power Five conferences. That's really all it's about. And really, a lot of Power Five teams aren't getting the benefit of the doubt. Look at TCU and Baylor in 2014. Both get left out in favor of Blue Blood Ohio State. It's a tough system, man. One more scenario I like. I like the 12-team playoff format as well. I think it's more of a progressive thing. I think the next step is going to 8, and then maybe eventually you go to 12. 12 is what FCS does, I believe, or they did. I think they're at 16 now, actually. Here's why I like 12. I think 12 is the most you can do without diminishing the regular season. You've got your top four teams getting byes. And then you've got 5 playing 12, 6 playing 11, 7 playing 10, and 8 playing 9 with the higher-ranked teams hosting that round. Pretty big incentive to do well in the regular season, am I right? I think so. And an even bigger incentive to get one of those top four spots so you can have a bye. Then in the quarterfinal rounds, the top four seeds, they host. You know, if Alabama's the number one seed, they get to host that first game. So you're playing for a lot in the regular season. It's not just about getting in. It's about getting that bye or at least getting that home game in the first round. Then the semifinals and the finals can be like they are now. Play at traditional bowl games. Go to the Rose Bowl. Go to the Fiesta Bowl. Play at Jerry World and the Cotton Bowl. You know, all those things. And just rotate. Do what you do now. I like that scenario. In the 8-team playoff format, it would be the top four seeds host. And then same as now. Either way, it's a much better system than it is now. And it's really not that difficult to figure out. I think the problem is everybody likes controversy. You know what I like? I like seeing the best teams duke it out on the field. We'll never know if TCU was the best team in 2014. We'll never know if UCF could have played with the big boys last year. Hell, look at Boise State teams and TCU teams from before the playoff era. There's some unbeaten teams there. Utah in 2008, there's been some big-time teams that didn't get a chance. And we can't go back, but we can fix this for the future. Now, I know we're not going to see it this year, but I would really challenge the higher-ups in college football to take a look at this because we're moving in the right direction, but I think we're stuck in the mud a little bit, and that's a shame. I think this sport needs to continue to evolve. It's my favorite sport, but it's also the only sport that has a very flawed postseason. It really does. It really does. It's the best regular season in sports. It's the worst postseason in sports. Anyway, that's my stance on it. You can check me out on Twitter, at Harrison1033. Feel free to hit me up and give your thoughts on all things college football and the college football playoff. Up next, my Power 5 Big 12 quarterbacks heading into the 2018 season. We'll discuss here on the Four Verticals podcast as Episode 2 continues to roll along. Segment of this edition of the Four Verticals podcast. I'm your host, Harrison Graham. Over the next few episodes, as we continue to close in on the college football season, I'm going to do some version of a Power 5 as it relates to the Big 12. This week, I'm going to go through my Power 5 Big 12 quarterbacks with Baker Mayfield, Mason Rudolph, Kenny Hill, Nick Szymanek, and some others all gone. There's a lot of young signal callers in this league. So let's get started as we go from number 5 to 1.
Number 5.
Snap, drop, Brewer picks it up. He's going to throw. Touchdown. Tristan Ebner, his third of the quarter. And Baylor within two of tying his football game.
Kept by Brewer. Brewer has the first down. Brewer racing. Brewer still on his feet. Finally gets tripped up down near the 5-yard line by Sammy Douglas. A 51-yard run by Charlie Brewer.
Play pass designed beautifully. Plenty of time. Brewer lobs one. End zone. Caught. Touchdown, Baylor. Jordan Furbacher, the tight end.
Baylor quarterback Charlie Brewer really came onto the scene in the middle of October when he relieved Zach Smith in the middle of a blowout against West Virginia at home. Entering the fourth quarter, it was 38-13 in the Mountaineers' favor. All Charlie Brewer did was engineer a ferocious comeback. The Bears ultimately fell 38-36, but Brewer in that game went 8-13 for 109 yards and a couple of touchdowns, ultimately just coming a two-point conversion short. Brewer would not look back from this as he started four games down the stretch, completed 71% of his throws in those starts, 68% for the season. Brewer had 11 touchdowns to just 4 interceptions. Accuracy and taking care of the ball, not an issue for this kid. He also had 300-plus yard games, including a 417-yard game against an improved Texas Tech defense. He also threw, and this might be the most impressive thing Charlie Brewer did last season, in the season finale, threw for 301 yards against the best defense in the conference in TCU. I mentioned accuracy. Go back to his late Travis days. His senior year at Lake Travis in 2016, he set a Texas high school football record for completion percentage, 77.4% he completed as a senior at Lake Travis. And despite that, he was still under-recruited. Matt Rhule saw something in this kid when he got the Baylor job and offered him late in the recruiting process, which Brewer ultimately decided to decommit from SMU and go down to Waco. He's got the weapons, Denzel Mims and Chris Platt. Platt coming back from an injury after missing a lot of last season. Don't forget also Jalen Hurd. Remember the running back at Tennessee? He wanted to switch positions in Knoxville. Butch Jones and those guys were not interested. Ultimately, Jalen Hurd ends up transferring to Baylor. He is eligible this year. Mims coming off the monster sophomore season. He's going to be an NFL guy, so take advantage of him this year. The next step for Charlie Brewer is the vertical passing game. With the weapons Brewer has, he should be able to open up the offense a little bit more. Last year, a lot of what you saw was underneath stuff. He doesn't have the strongest arm in the world, as he's not the biggest kid, but I would imagine his first full offseason, he's probably bulked up a little bit. The arm strength should improve. If he can open up the vertical passing game with his ability to be accurate underneath, you got Jamichael Hasty running the football, Baylor could be primed to surprise some people this year. I've got Charlie Brewer as my number five quarterback in the Big 12 entering this season.
Number four.
Delton runs it again. Delton with patience down the sideline and out of bounds. They call it a touchdown. He got in. Alex Delton is looking like Optimus Klein today.
Thompson looking, changes direction, scrambling, end zone, touchdown! Isaiah Schubert for the lead and the win!
Delton has a big run. Dimmel along with him. Delton running away from the Bruins. Touchdown! And a flag on the tackle in the end zone. What a first play for that young man.
Thompson downfield. Pringle open. There he goes. Four scores for Byron Pringle.
Both Alex Delton and Skylar Thompson got several opportunities to play last year as starter. Jesse Ertz had multiple injuries early in the season. In seven games, Delton completed 57.6% of his passes for 637 yards and three touchdowns, threw a couple of interceptions. It's on the ground where Delton makes his money, though. 500 yards on just 100 carries with eight touchdowns. A couple of notable games for Delton and a 42-35 loss against number 9 Oklahoma. Delton went 12-14 with 144 yards with a touchdown and a pick. Look at the numbers on the ground, though. 27 carries, 142 yards, and three more touchdowns. Four touchdown game against a top 10 team in OU. That was really his coming out party. Also, late in the year, Cactus Bowl MVP in a 35-17 win over UCLA. He goes 7-10 with 52 yards and a touchdown. Look again at the ground, though. 20 carries, 158 yards, and three touchdowns. When you watch Alex Delton play, he's really creative on the ground. He can really burn, and once he gets into the open field, it's goodbye. The passing game is still a work in progress for Delton. Like I said, under 58% completion percentage, just a 3-2 touchdown to interception ratio. You look at Skylar Thompson, more of a passer the sophomore is. In eight games last year, completed over 61% of his throws for 689 yards with five touchdowns and three interceptions. His coming out party was late in the year against number 13 Oklahoma State, engineered a 45-40 win, went 10-13 with 204 yards and three touchdowns. He can run a little bit too. 17 carries for 93 yards in that game. How about an encore for Thompson? Just the next week, he follows that up with a last-second touchdown pass and a 20-19 win over a very solid Iowa State team. Bill Snyder brought both of his quarterbacks to Big 12 Media Days and has made it very clear that it is an open competition. Both Delton and Thompson talked about the competition, and they understand what the situation is. I think regardless of who is named the starter, both of these young men will get snaps this year. With Thompson's ability as a more polished passer and being a year younger, I might give him the edge to be the opening day starter, but expect both him and Delton to get a lot of playing time this year because Alex Delton's ability to run and how explosive he is, they're just going to have to find ways to utilize him in the run game. You often hear the phrase, when you have two quarterbacks, you don't have one. Well, that is not the case for Bill Snyder with these two quarterbacks. Both Skylar Thompson and Alex Delton are legitimate starting quarterbacks. And that's why I've got the combination of both Delton and Thompson in my number four slot of the power rankings of my Big 12 quarterbacks entering the 2018 season.
Number three.
Kyler Murray's got to come in and play some real football tonight.
And now the talented runner, the sophomore Murray, comes in. And the first down pitch, they get it back. And Murray, he showed you the acceleration and the speed. He brings an element.
It's a different gear when he gets the ball.
Kyler Murray taking a deep shot. And he got it. Lands in the hands of Marquise Brown. And how about that going up top on the play right here? It's a big toss by Kyler Murray.
And on first down, Murray's going to keep it, and he can run. He can run across midfield. He can run down the sideline. Kyler Murray being knocked out of bounds at the four by Elijah Battle.
It's been a bit of a roller coaster ride for Kyler Murray as he finally gets his chance to be Oklahoma's starting quarterback. We all know the story where Murray, who perhaps is the most decorated player in the history of Texas high school football, went to Texas A&M, where it ultimately did not work out under Kevin Sumlin. He did transfer to Oklahoma after that and was expecting to be the starter last season before the Big 12 granted Baker Mayfield an extra year of eligibility. So last season in mop-up duty, Murray went 18 for 21, which is just under 86% for 359 yards and three touchdowns. On the ground is where he's really dynamic. In just 14 carries, he had 142 yards. Expect Lincoln Riley to build around his strengths as a runner. He's got running backs Rodney Hood and Trey Sermon, receivers Marquise Brown, CeeDee Lamb, plenty of weapons for the junior Murray to go to. Lincoln Riley did say at Big 12 Media Days that it is a competition between him and Austin Kendall. I'm not sure I buy that, especially considering that Kyler Murray has already signed to play with the Oakland A's after this season for $4.6 million. I'm not sure he's sticking around if he doesn't have pretty good assurances that he's the starting quarterback. Assuming he does start, I think you'll see more of a rushing attack, some option stuff with Murray and those talented running backs. Not to say that he will not be throwing the ball a lot, because in a Lincoln Riley offense, he will, and he's certainly capable of doing that. Just expect OU to utilize his feet and what he's able to do in the run game. He came into college with a lot of accolades, but we really haven't seen a lot of this kid. But with his ability to throw, his ability to run, it's finally his time to play. Perhaps can play under a little less pressure, considering he already has just under $5 million coming his way for baseball. 4 years in, can Kyler Murray finally be the player that he was in high school, that he was recruited to be? I've got him in my third slot in my Big 12 quarterbacks power rankings.
Number two.
Kemp going up top for Lazar. It's caught. Touchdown, Iowa State. And the Cyclones have shocked Memorial Stadium.
Kemp on third and seven, sits in the pocket, floats it right down the middle, wide open. Akeem Butler, touchdown.
Third and goal from inside the five-yard line. Kemp, end zone, and it's caught by Butler. Is he in? Yes, he is. Touchdown, Cyclones. Give it to me again, I'll come through.
Kyle Kemp was no doubt the most unlikely of names to end up on this list as of a year ago, but yet here we are. The sixth-year senior's journey is absurd after things did not work out early on at Oregon State. Kemp would then end up at Hutchinson Community College before transferring to Iowa State as a walk-on from Matt Campbell, who recruited him to play at Toledo. Kemp was buried on the depth chart in 2016 before playing as the backup last season to Jacob Park. Park then left the team due to off-the-field issues, and Kemp finally had his opportunity. In his first start, he capitalized on that opportunity as he engineered a 38-31 upset win in Norman over third-ranked Oklahoma. In that game, Kemp went nuts, 18 of 24, 343 yards, and three touchdowns. Kyle Kemp had officially arrived. A few weeks later, Kemp scored another top-five win as his steady play was critical in a 14-7 win over TCU. Numbers weren't as gaudy, but 202 yards and two touchdowns to just one interception. Kemp would end the season on a high note as well, as he captured a third top 25 win with a 21-20 victory over Memphis in the Liberty Bowl, in which he threw for 314 yards and two more scores in that game. If you add it all up for the whole season in eight games, the senior completed 66% of his passes for over 1,700 yards and 15 touchdowns. Only had three interceptions. That's what I like most about Kyle Kemp. The 15-3 ratio, very steady with the ball. If you watch him play, he doesn't have the strongest arm. He's not the most accurate at time, but he's a good decision maker. He does not turn the football over, and I like that. He's got one of the best running backs in the country in David Montgomery. He'll have to find a new top target as Alan Lazard is finally gone. The funny thing about Kemp is, coming into the season, He didn't know if he'd be playing football. He played as a senior last year. The NCAA granted him an extra year of eligibility since he basically did not play for 2 years as he was bouncing around in between colleges. Good for Iowa State. Good for Kyle Kemp, a kid who's really bounced around and has really deserved to be here. No drama heading into fall camp as he knows he's the starter. Iowa State believes in him. Matt Campbell believes in him. His steady play could be key for the Cyclones in 2018 if they're going to make a push in the Big 12. I've got Kyle Kemp as my number two quarterback coming into 2018 in the Big 12 Conference.
Number one.
Greer to throw on third and eight. Walks one, and it is caught! David Sills! Touchdown! West Virginia! Greer has time, floats it to White. Tip catch. White is able to stay on his feet, and he is marching all the way to the house. Only 10 seconds left, though. Greer, clock ticking. 5 seconds. Greer, under pressure. 3 seconds. Throws it up for the end zone. He's got a man open. It's White. He holds on. Touchdown, West Virginia.
No surprises here, right? West Virginia's Will Greer is the one big-time veteran quarterback coming back in the Big 12 this season. I mentioned earlier Baker Mayfield's gone, Mason Rudolph's gone, even guys like Kenny Hill and Nick Szymanek are gone. So Greer's clearly the veteran of the group in this conference. He was leading the nation in touchdown passes last year before breaking his thumb late in the season in a loss against Texas. 34 touchdowns for Greer last season. Did have 12 interceptions in just 11 games play. I know Dana Holgorsen would like to see that number go down, but he's kind of a gunslinger, so you kind of live with the good and the bad considering the amount of production he's putting up. And just those 11 games, really more like 10 and a half games, 3,490 yards. Expect Greer to throw for over 4,000 yards this year if he stays healthy. He's got maybe the best receiver in the country, if not for sure the best in the Big 12, and David Sills. Sills had just under 20 touchdowns last season. Both Greer and Sills were at Big 12 Media Days this year. You can tell they're on the same page. Another offseason, another fall camp coming up together. That chemistry is going to be just even stronger and stronger between the two. Probably the best quarterback to receiver combination in all of college football coming into this season. Greer's got kind of a interesting story as well. Started at Florida before having to transfer after he got suspended for the PEDs. Really broke out onto the scene last year. This is probably an NFL-type player. Expect him to be in the Heisman race. West Virginia has already launched their Heisman campaign for Will Greer. He's big time. I want to see more consistency and a little more accountability from Will Greer this year. Not that he wasn't accountable last year, but 7-6 is not good enough when you've got that good of a player leading your troops. You've got David Sills. Greer, 64% last year. I'd like to see that go up a little bit. Just a little more consistency and attention to detail and be a little bit more of a leader. I think that's the next step for Will Greer. He's got all the tools. He can make all the throws. He really throws a beautiful deep ball. He's accurate on the intermediate throws. He threw a couple of comeback passes against TCU last year to the far sideline. Really impressive. I watched that game in person. He's a big-time quarterback. Will Greer can make all the throws. He's probably the best quarterback in college football coming into this season. Can he step up as a leader and just be a little bit more consistent? If he can do some of those things, expect West Virginia to challenge for the Big 12 Conference this year. They've got the quarterback. They've got the receiver. Dana Holgorsen feels like their defense will be much improved. A lot of it's really on Will Greer. Can he take the next step and be a little bit more steady? If he can do that, expect West Virginia to challenge for the Big 12 championship. I've got Will Greer as my number one quarterback in the Big 12 Conference coming into this season. So there you have it. There's my Power 5 Big 12 quarterbacks in the Big 12 Conference heading into 2018. Just to recap, at number 5, I've got Baylor quarterback Charlie Brewer. At number 4, I've got the combination of Alex Delton and Skylar Thompson at Kansas State. Number 3, Oklahoma's Kyler Murray. Let's see what he brings to the table coming into his one season as a starter. Number 2, I've got Iowa State's Kyle Kemp. And my top quarterback in 2018 in the Big 12 Conference, no one other than Will Greer out of West Virginia. I am excited to see some other guys play as well. What is Sean Robinson going to bring to the table for TCU, assuming he's named the starter? Big-time Texas high school football player out of DeSoto. Excited to watch him play. What's going to happen in Austin? Is Sam Ellinger going to win the job? If he does, is he ready to take that next step? Is Sam Ellinger the quarterback that Texas has desperately been looking for since Colt McCoy left. We'll find out coming up this season. A couple other schools, McLean Carter out of Texas Tech, he appears to be the starter. Did not like what I saw in his one start in Austin last year. Some uncertainty in Lubbock at that position for the first time in a long time. We'll see how it all plays out as we get closer to the season. Lots of new faces and new signal callers in the Big 12 Conference. That's going to wrap it up for episode 2 of the Four Verticals podcast. I'm your host, Harrison Graham. Next week, some things to look forward to. I will have my Power 5 running backs in the Big 12, an underrated conference for running backs, I think. I don't think people around the country understand the amount of talent that is in this conference at running back. I'll do that. Also, I'll start previewing some individual teams in the Big 12 as we get closer to week one of the season. I'll probably work from my way from the bottom to the top. Haven't decided just yet exactly how I'm going to look at all 10 teams. If I'm being completely honest, I probably will not spend a lot of time talking about the lowly Kansas Jayhawks next week. Expect more on Texas Tech and Baylor. I'll take a look at those two teams and see if they can take a step higher in the rankings, or I should say the standings in the Big 12 heading into 2018, especially Baylor. I'm really intrigued by Matt Rhule's group. I think they could maybe push for a bowl game this year, so I'll take a look at them and Texas Tech. As far as anything else, we'll see what comes up. I'm still working on some guests coming up in the future. I can't promise that for episode 3, but I'm continuing to work on that. So we'll see if that happens next week. If not, that will happen in the future. You can guarantee that. But as far as episode 2 goes, that's going to put a wrap on this week's edition of the Four Verticals podcast. I'm your host, Harrison Graham, and as I am going to end every single episode, I will give you this one simple piece of advice. If you are ever in doubt, go deep.